show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to be with you today. I hope it's a nice day where you are. We're coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. And, of course, we're all across the country and all around the world. And welcome to everybody. You folks over at iTunes and Democrats.com and Democratic Underground. Folks over to the Head On Radio Network chat room and others, thank you. Thank you for tuning in today. We're glad to have you along with us. Lots in the news today, and we'll try and touch on the most important issues that have come up since yesterday and the day before. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call, and we hope you do. 866-546-5254. You won't have to wait an hour and a half like you do on some of the programs that they brag about. I heard Pills Limbaugh the other day bragging, oh, my goodness, he said, I've got a listener on here. It's been waiting for an hour and 35 minutes, but then it was worth it, wasn't it? You know, and he goes on in his amazing style. Well, anyway, you won't have to wait that long on this program. We do not have as many listeners as Mr. Limbaugh. I guess nobody does. Nor do I want the kind of listeners that Mr. Limbaugh has. He can keep his audience. Sometimes it's we have people like him and Hannity, and they talk numbers, and, you know, I'd rather have a quality audience. I'd rather have an audience who knows the score, rather have an audience who's up on things and doesn't necessarily depend on me to get the truth to them. You can depend on me that what I say is the truth on here, but I'm not necessarily here to educate each and every one of you, because I know you keep yourselves pretty well educated. We're here to let you know our opinions on it, and fact is we don't deal with a bunch of dunces like they do on the Mr. Pills Limbaugh show, so that's it. That's how it is. Quote for the day. I'm going to try and remember to try and have a quote for every day, but I love this. I ran across this this morning, actually. And let me just put it in quotes here. Because I'm 83 years old, the lying bastards on the package, Brown and Williamson, promised to kill me. Instead, their cigarettes didn't work. Now I'm forced to suffer leaders with names like Bush and Dick and up till recently, Colon. End quote. That's by the late Kurt Vonnegut in a Rolling Stone interview last August on why he considered suing Big Tobacco. Kurt, you're never going to go away. Guy had a great mind and politically astute and a sharp wit. no matter when you heard Kurt Vonnegut talking, he was always right with it. Always right with it. Hearings going on this week again. I see what's-her-name, Monica Goodling, is scheduled for the 23rd. I think that is next Wednesday. Yeah, that should be interesting. And I also see that one of the vice president's people, a former aide to Jack Abramoff, is going to be now. I can't think of her name. She's going to be testifying with immunity. Be interesting to see if any of these people have anything to say. And the hearings. I wonder if many of you are as frustrated as I am over the investigations and hearing and so forth. I really am. I'm tremendously frustrated with it. What good are all of these hearings if the Democrats are going to sit and listen to the litany of lies coming from the Bush administration and don't do anything about them? Hell, we knew these people were scoundrels and liars. We don't need any more proof of that. How about some bite? Some bite behind the bark of the Democratic leaders. Oh, they've talked a good game, but what have they actually done so far? You know, they're not going to do anything more than take testimony. Then what's the point? They know we want action. They know there should be action. And what's the problem with producing indictments and initiating impeachment hearing? Why hasn't there been a special counsel appointed? What's the holdup? Are these guys still afraid of the big bad wolf, the Republicans' smear machine? Are they still afraid of that? You know, not long ago, I sat in on a meeting with Senator Leahy. And he talked a good game. He talked like he really meant business. But what have we really done so far except talk for several months? I'm not liking this. Henry Waxman and John Conyers, hardworking people. Nancy Pelosi, what are they waiting for? Do we have to fill the streets in Washington, D.C. with protest marches for these people to understand that we want action on the crimes of the Bush administration? And oh yeah, you've heard it, I've heard it, I heard it again today. Those of us pushing for action on the crimes of the Bush administration, we're accused of being the fringe. Well, now, to steal a phrase from John Kennedy back when he gave that litany of what a liberal is, and he said, then call me a liberal. If I'm what the fringe is, and of calling for impeachment and calling for justice with the people in this administration, if that's the fringe, damn it, I'm in the fringe. And so are the majority of Democrats that I know. So sticks and stones and all that. But what's the holdup? What is the problem? Don't tell me with some of this latest stuff we found out that they don't have reason to appoint a special counsel. I spoke to Professor Jonathan Turley at George Washington University earlier today about getting him on for an interview. And there's as much, in his opinion, and I certainly agree with him, there's as much reason right now to have impeachment hearings and have a special counsel as at any time in our American history. And I most certainly agree that if the crimes against the American people by this Bush administration do not warrant impeachment, then by all means, take the impeachment clause out of the law, because it will be hollow and meaningless if this gang of thieves and thugs are not impeached. So come on, guys and gals, Nancy, get your act together. We want some action on this. This is not a lunatic fringe. We're not a bunch of loons. We're people who have carefully considered all the evidence that we've seen, facts that we've seen. And I know our Congress critters, both in the House and the Senate, they've seen all the facts that we've seen, perhaps more. So what is the holdup? Are we merely playing politics with all of this? Are we going to have a long, drawn-out months and months and months of investigations and hearings with no end result other than to try and destroy the Republicans' chances in the next election? Oh, sure. The Republicans' chances in the next election will be dashed when all this comes out. They'll be dashed right now. I don't know what the Democrats need to do to understand the fact that the Republicans are cooked. They are cooked right now. They have lost their credibility. These debates, so-called debates for the Republicans, they're sham. They're sham for the Democrats as well. It's just a spectacle. Totally meaningless. But what's the holdup? I mean, we know about prolific lies coming out of this administration. And let me tell you something. If you or I get called in front of the United States House or the Senate or the FBI or any investigative federal investigative body, and we tell them some lies and they prove that we've lied to them, it's a felony. And we're going to jail. And you can bet on that. So what's different about these people? Just because they have big titles and big names and money, prestige and power? Are they above the law? One would think so. You know, this Alberto Gonzalez mess is completely out of hand, and we're going to talk about that at length today. But it's completely out of hand. We may well never know why for sure the nine U.S. attorneys were fired. But what we do know, and what we do know for a fact, is that our Justice Department, the highest legal authorities in the United States, that metes out justice for you and for me and all the citizens of this country, what we do know, that organization is being run by a guy who evidently has no more ethics than Al Capone had. We know that. We're not speculating on that. We're not playing politics with that. We know this man has no scruples. And this latest story, this so-called Godfather story, which we'll talk about a little later, if that doesn't nail the case shut against Alberto Gonzalez, I don't know what would. Do you agree, or am I just whistling Dixie here? Well, not Dixie. Not a song I particularly like. Am I in the fringe because I want action on this? Are the people that move on in the fringe because now they're running ads against Carl Levin and Steny Hoyer? I have to tell you, I don't know Steny Hoyer. I don't recall ever meeting him. I have met Carl Levin many times. I am surprised at both of these guys. We're having these votes on appropriations for the war. It just seems like we can't get it done. We just can't get it done. Why? Why not? It cannot be that they don't know what we want, because God knows the switchboards in the House and Senate office buildings have been ringing off the hook for weeks and weeks now about the appropriations bill for the war. I would seriously doubt if there is one listener left in my audience who has not called and expressed their opinion about prolonging this war with an appropriation bill that would allow it to go on well into next year. And we do know that they're planning on allowing this to go on well into next year. I see General Petraeus now is openly talking about how he will not have any, he will not have anything to run on in September. He won't have any. He won't have anything definitive, I believe, is the word he used to say. And that just strikes me as absolutely amazing. It really does. First, we had a surge, and they were going to need till, this was in January, and they were going to need about 90 days, they said. Ran out to be about the 1st of May. And we were supposed to know something by then. Well, they were, depending on who you listen to, a little late getting started with the surge. Didn't get the people over there right away. I don't know if they didn't have their plans together. Whatever the problem was. Then they came along and said, well, you know, early summer. Early summer, we'll know. We'll have something to say in early summer. And then many of the Republican politicians are talking about, well, it's going to be September. Give us till September. Give us till September so that we know the generals on the ground will have a report for us, and they'll come back and they'll fill us in on what's happening in September. And now we hear today that General Petraeus said that any report that he gives on this escalation in September will not have say anything definitive. In other words, they plan to continue this escalation of the war in Iraq well into 2008. That is the plan right now. There are no plans whatsoever by this administration to end this war anytime soon. No plans. As they said before, there is no plan B. No plan B. And I went back and looked it up. Back on April 26, Petraeus told reporters that, and let me quote him, in early September, he would provide an assessment of the situation in Iraq with respect to our mission and offer recommendations on the way ahead, end quote. But then he comes along this week, and he's being interviewed by CNN reporter Gene Aref, and Petraeus says, come September, I don't think we'll have anything definitive in September. Certainly, we'll have some indicators on the political side in Iraq. And if you don't want to take that as a sign of what's about to happen, take a look at the rest of the signs that Bush is planning some sort of a long-term escalation. There are none in this audience, certainly. None of my liberal Democratic friends, I don't think, that would believe for a moment this administration is planning on pulling out of Iraq before Junior Bush's presidential term is over. Is there? Are there any of you that have any notion that that man is thinking along those lines? I think not. And there are plenty of other signs. Last week, the Pentagon notified more than 35,000 soldiers and Marines to be prepared to deploy to Iraq beginning this fall. They said, well, that's just a move to allow commanders to maintain the ongoing buildup of troops through the end of the year, if needed. And the New York Times reported in late April that the timelines that Bush officials are now discussing suggest that the White House may maintain the increased numbers of American troops in Iraq well into next year. And in early March, the New York Times reported that Lieutenant General Raymond Odinero, the day-to-day commander of American forces in Iraq, had recommended in a private memo that Bush's increased troop levels be maintained through February 2008. And he also said in January that even with the additional troops, it might take another 2 or 3 years for American and Iraqi forces to gain the upper hand in the war. Now, here this man is talking about a military victory. We all know that's foolhardy. And he's talking 2 or 3 years. And yet Bush and his people are spreading this malarkey that they're going to compromise with the Congress. What compromise is that? I want to know. It's an ugly, ugly mess. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Heard an interview with some soldiers the other night, and when we go to a break right now, I'll play this for you. And this interview, to me, says it all about the real reason for this war.
Any job that's in the military, there's a civilian contractor right there.
Across the board, people lost their jobs. Quartermaster companies, mechanic, any logistics soldiers were involved with, their jobs were outsourced to KBR. When I could be actively becoming a better soldier and becoming more proficient in my job, instead I'm going to sit up on guard duty. It was devastating.
There was so much money being given away over there to contractors. I mean, there were jobs that didn't even need to be there. You know, we'd go into the tent to use our internet, and the woman who would put my name down to assign me to a computer would be a civilian contractor who was making six figures to be over there. Why is she there? Why are we paying this woman to do this? It certainly affected retention.
All across the board, there was thousands of soldiers sitting around doing nothing.
I don't know why any military person would reenlist to do the same job when they could get out of the military and make, you know, six times the money and do the same job.
They had the little mobile units that we had to put our clothes in, like a net duffel bag. Halliburton charged government $100 for every bag of clothes they washed.
I was told by my chain of command that I was not allowed to wash my laundry on my own. I had to take it to KBR to have it washed, even though we all knew that they were doing a horrible job, because they get $99 a bag for a bag of laundry that I could do at home for $3.
Cost Plus encourages you to run up the cost of a program, because you are going to get a percentage of the end result. And so there's no incentive to stay at Motel 6. Stay at the Ritz-Carlton in Qatar, folks.
The place that KBR chose for orientation in Kuwait was a huge resort set right on the ocean. They had five-star meals catered in every day.
It was so lavish. Rows of vegetable platters, beef platters, fish platters.
It's a cost-plus contract. KBR looked at it, the more money we spend, that's more money we get in our pockets. They got the wrong equipment, ordered the wrong stuff, computers still in boxes, new vehicles. They'd push them out in what they called burn pits. And they just set it on fire, claim it as a loss, get more money for the right equipment or the right stuff they needed.
You got brand new trucks over there, and there's not even oil filters.
So when the motor blows, what do? Buy a new truck and build the government.
$75,000 truck. They wouldn't even have a spare tire to fit it. And we had to blow it up. And they didn't care. Halliburton didn't, because the government's paying for it.
The legal way of stealing from the government or taxpayers' money.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is Howard Zinn. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress. spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced false news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
In Iraq, my administration looked at the intelligence, and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence, and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny!
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Do it. Give us a call, 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you today. And speaking of telephones, let's go to the telephone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Phil up in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil.
Boy, I share your frustration. And I believe a deal was done, Guy, that they're going to take it right up to the 08 election. And what told me that was when Conyers had a whole, you know, he published a book of a case against Bush.
Yep.
For running, you know, lying up to the, you know, they did, his staff, for the first, they did a couple years worth of legal work preparing a case. And when he was shut down by Pelosi, you know, that just said it all. And, Guy, I realize you're a Democrat right down to the bone, but this particular crew that is in the Democratic Party right now has abandoned the American people, and they've made it very clear. And I believe I no longer want to attach myself to this particular crew in the Democratic Party, and I've resigned, you know, from the Democratic Party and gone back to being just an American, you know, on my voting card. But I'm wondering if it's going to be like 1968 again, and maybe it has to, you know, the Democratic Convention, like 68.
Well, I don't know. We're not mobilized like we were then.
I can share with you why, but I'm sorry I'm interrupting you. Go ahead, guys.
Well, no, we're not mobilized, and I don't think we're going to be mobilized. And we call for a march, a demonstration, get a few thousand people there. Nothing like we had back in those days. Nothing at all.
Well,
it's frustrating.
Plus, you had a media back then, you know, that wasn't 100%. Controlled by these bastards that have, the military-industrial complex owns the media. They own these people in Congress, you know. And if they don't get these Congress people, you know, with the greenbacks, they get them to toe the line, or to get rid of them.
Well, you're right. In those days, we had actual newsrooms who were not accountable to the president of the network or whatever for the bottom line. They had a newsroom because they felt obliged to have a good newsroom, and the rest of the programming made the profit. Now, it's all got to be profit, and you've got to toe the line, and you've got to do what corporate tells you to do, whether it's good news business or not. And I've seen it failing. I mean, you know, when the likes of your Walter Cronkites and Huntley Brinkley's and those folks got out of the news business, it's a different story.
I believe it's a matter of ownership.
Oh, it is. It is.
And it's not just corporate, Guy. The corporations that own them are part of the military-industrial complex. It really should be named military-industrial media complex, because the media is a tool of the war makers now. It's not just a prop. No.
Well, you're right, Phil. How much money has General Electric reaped off of this war? I mean, I don't have the figures here, but, you know, they're intertwined with the NBC and the General Electric, and one is the other.
Well, I think we have to, you know, I've been to those protests where 500,000 people in Washington. This tactic no longer works, you know. And I think there's a guy on the AfterDowningStreet.org blog who's been organizing, you know, volunteers to campaign against Pelosi to rid her of her seat, you know, actually find a candidate and run somebody against her in 08. And you know, and I'm going to go out to California, me and my girlfriend, and you know, do whatever it takes. And I really believe these people, if they're not serving, I mean, God darn it, guy, these guys have committed the most grievous, they've launched a war of aggression, for crying out loud. And if they're not going to be held accountable for that, we've got to get rid of these Pelosi's and the Reeds and the Levins and everything.
Well, who do you replace? You know, here's the conundrum. Who do you replace them with, Phil?
Well, I don't
you know, isn't it better to have? Isn't it? Right. You know, I'm forced, and I don't want to come around the line of this way of thinking, but I've been forced to come around this way of thinking. Isn't it better to have somebody on my side 70% of the time than less than 50? I hate it that it's come to this.
It's obscene, guy. We've got to think of something. You know, at least threaten them with it, you know. What about these recalls? I asked somebody else that one day. I think I asked David Swanson of that after DowningStreet.org, and he didn't have an answer for me. But you know how they recalled Gray Davis, you know,
yeah,
the state of California?
I don't know if there's a machinery in place to do that with congressmen and senators. I think this much I'm pretty sure of.
Yeah.
And somebody call and correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's up to the individual states.
Yes.
So I don't know, but you're right. You know, here, Phil, today, and was it yesterday? I'm losing track of time here. We've had a Congress by a close vote that going to allow Bush now to, if he wants to go to war with Iran. I'm appalled that enough Democrats that went against the party on that vote. I mean, that's shocking to me.
That's what I mean, guy. These are not imposters, guy. They are criminally complicit. These are crimes that are being done in our name, and they are complicit in not only allowing it, but voting for it.
Yeah, that's a horrible vote. And you know, the likes of Steny Hoyer, he was involved in that.
Steny Hoyer and Rahm Emanuel and Pelosi, I tell you right now, they're AIPAC whores. You know, and AIPAC's got a ton of money, and they've got a ton of media influence. And again, these people that are in Congress, Democrats and Republicans, you exclude Kucinich and a few of the black women out in California, you know, and you've got a couple few hundred imposters in there that do not represent the American people. And actually, what they have been representing, I'm not a lawyer, but damn it, they've got to be criminally complicit, because these are horrible crimes.
Well, I just don't know where it ends. I am, you know, when we took over the Congress, and we Democrats took over the Congress, I thought, oh, good, there's hope. I mean, I knew we had this problem. I didn't know it was so pervasive.
I'm with you. What a disappointment.
And January comes along, and they go, okay, I'm going to give them a little while, you know. Give them a little while. Nancy gets through her first 100-hour thing, which was just nothing but, you know, publicity stunt.
It's a done deal, guy. They made a deal. This war is going to be used for, you know, I've heard this said that, you know, two sides of the same coin. And unless you can prove otherwise, that's what we have right now. The folks that are, representing the Democratic Party and the otherwise we would see something different, guy.
Well, we have the Republicans openly daring the Democrats, and I saw it again last night. Yeah, you've got the votes right now. If you want to, if you want to defund the war, go ahead. Go ahead and do it. And they're daring the Democrats to do it, and they won't do it.
That's because I really believe it's a game. It's a show. It's all BS because they're serving the same masters. If they weren't, this thing would be over. They'd be adhering to. I mean, guy, you have 3 out of 4 Americans want the troops the heck out of Iraq.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 out of every 4 for crying out loud. I really believe our party has been stolen, just as the Republican Party was stolen. It's a little easier for them, you know. They're greedy, corporate, selfish, anyway, to begin with, you know. But they took over the Democratic Party, too. And as a people, we have got to figure something out. And like Molly Ivan said, you know, bang pots and pans.
Even yeah.
If it's just a couple of us. Well, we got our Code Pink weekly demonstration tonight at 6, and, you know, damn it, people, if there's not a demonstration in your hometown, all it takes is 2 or 3 people, and you can give up, for crying out loud, you can give up an hour or two one night a week. I mean, 1 or 2 hours?
I think I might have told you the last time I saw anybody demonstrating here locally. Now I know they do in Naples every Friday night, but last time I saw anybody demonstrating actually in the street demonstrating here locally was some guy standing out in front of a on the sidewalk in Fort Myers, Florida, with a sign that said "Honk if you hate Sanjaya."
That's
their idea of a protest.
That's pathetic,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, it is.
I mean. You know, and it's on us, guy. We the people. The soldiers are doing their part in being willing to die to keep their oath to the Constitution. And the American people have not kept their end of the bargain. You know, Congress and the president, they're all bought off. So, you know, we have to stop. I think we have to stop blaming them because they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're corporate whores. So we've got to start blaming ourselves, man, because we're the only ones left to make a difference, and we haven't really risen to the occasion yet. You know,
I wish they'd just come out and admit to it. If they're going to be this way, let's throw away the Constitution. It's nothing but a doormat for them anyway. It's not a government by the people, of the people, and by the people, and for the people anymore. They're making a mockery out of the Constitution of the United States. I wish they'd be up more upfront about it and just, of course, they've been pretty upfront.
Well, if they're going to throw it away, it's on us, man.
Yeah.
It really is. We the people, the first 3 words of the Constitution are we the people.
We'll let them do it. You know.
Yeah,
we
have been. I'm sorry, guy. I know I give the same old rap every day, but I guess nothing.
It's utter frustration. It's frustration.
Yeah.
I'm so terribly frustrated when that bill failed to allow them to to keep them out of Iran, prohibit them from going into Iran, diverting money from Afghanistan and Iraq to attack Iran. I couldn't believe that failed. That enough Democrats crossed over to do it, but they did. Hey, Phil, thanks for a good call.
Thank you, guy.
No, good to hear from you.
You too. Bye.
Let's go over here to line 1. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Is that me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I want to object to what the conversation that you and the previous gentleman were just having.
Okay.
I think that's a little bit incredible.
Why is that?
I spend half my time in the western suburbs of Chicago in Dennis Hastert's district.
Mm-hmm.
I spend the other half in northern Wisconsin in David Obey's district.
Mm-hmm.
Both of their offices are available to me. I could pick at either one.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you right now, there's no way that I'm going to, in fact, hassle David Obey for his positions and cut Dennis Hastert some slack because that's what I expect of him. I expect him to be a crook, a fool, but blasted, that's sick. That's disgusting.
What is?
That's like, with Hastert, I got a major polluter, and with David Obey, I've got a litterer, And I'm supposed to, in fact, bring charges against Obie or publicly belittle him?
Well, I did say during a conversation you're forced to go with whoever agrees with you most of the time now instead of somebody that's with you virtually all the time like we used to have it. Now we're forced to choose between somebody like Dennis Hastert and an Obie that maybe agrees with you 60% of the time and votes with you. We're screwed.
Well, with Obie, it's more like 80.
Well, it's not enough. When it pertains to the war, that's not enough. That's the...
You appear to want to remain a virgin for much too long. I don't expect anybody to agree with me 100%.
Well, not 100%, but when it comes to the number one overriding issue, look at it.
I would consider him a fool. The bottom line is that's crazy.
Would you not expect him to agree with you on the most overriding, most important issue facing us today? Do you not want agreement on that?
David Obie wants out of the...
Okay, David Obie does, but there's others that are not...
He's the one who, in fact, recently got nailed for calling one of the war protesters the idiot left, and I think I happen to agree with him.
So the people on the left are idiots because they want out of the war.
I did not say all people on the left were idiots.
No, I didn't say all either, but you said you agreed with him. Why?
I refer to the idiot left. There is certainly a small, smaller significant, I don't know how you want to characterize it, portion of the left that's got this hang-up on remaining virgin for the rest of their damn lives.
What do you mean by that?
There's a certain amount of filth in the world, and if you don't get somewhere near it, I mean, I'll take an OB over a Hastert any day.
Oh, I will too. I will too. But when I cast my vote for my Democrat, I want him to be with me on the issue he knows I cast my vote for. Every one of the Democrats knows that when they were elected this past fall or reelected, that the people who voted them in to end this war.
No, they don't.
They don't know that?
And I doubt that even you vote on a single issue either.
I did this time.
Oh.
It's the most important issue facing us right now. Immigration is not. The budget is not. None of it is. The war is the most important issue. And if
it is the most important issue. It is not the only issue.
No, but it's the most
and
important.
I have to accept it just a little bit less than purity on that most important issue. And it's more compensated for...
A little less than purity is allowing this thing to go on ad infinitum.
Well, you can't stop it. Not today. You haven't got the votes. You don't have a veto-proof majority. And until you do, you can't, in fact, say that the party could stop it if they were just sufficiently disciplined. Because even if they were absolutely disciplined and 100% of all Democrats voted the way you wanted them to... It still wouldn't end the war.
It's not veto-proof, but they could put enough pressure on this president to end it.
No, this president's a kook. This president's going to stay there if 100%.
Well, he may well, but I just because he's a kook.
If they wanted him out, he would still remain there because he thinks God wants him there.
Well, he may well, and I agree with you on that he is a kook. I think he's half nuts. I think he's got deep-seated psychological problems and always has. But I still maintain that the Democrats need to go along and show some solidarity on this, and they're
they
not.
They allowed this
bill to be defeated. I forget.
I'm more offended by what they did on drug reimportation than I am by the fact that not all of them agree on a particular set of fast hard withdrawal deadlines. I would prefer that, in fact, all of them said get out now, sure. But that's not the case. That's not a vote.
Oh, it's not the case, all right, but that doesn't mean that we can't try and make it the case. I'm not a political virgin. I've been around this game for a long time, been part of it. And I understand the way Congress works, but right now, the Democrats are not showing the cohesiveness they need to in order to get this over with. I'm very disappointed in them. I know they're not going to agree with me on 100% of the items. I mean, we had a lot of Democrats, for God's sake, that voted for the bankruptcy bill. I was mortified by that. But
mortified.
But I know that you know, that's how it is.
The biggest reverse Robin Hood scam.
Yeah, and I know a certain number of them were bought off on that thing, and that's the way it is. I know Big Pharma's bought off a certain number of them, but damn it, this war, I can't let up on it until they do what we sent them there to do, and they know, they definitely know. Look at the polls right now for the Congress.
How about look at your buddy with Code Pink who wants to have three people out protesting this evening so that, in fact, some news reporter can talk about how the Democrats are split on another issue. Give me a break. It's counterproductive. It hurts the cause. It does not help it.
So everybody should keep quiet then?
Well, no, I didn't say that either.
Well, then what should they do if they shouldn't go out and protest? What should they do?
I stopped by Representative Hastert's office. I don't go complain at Representative Obie's office. I know who my friend is, and I don't think he needs further problems from me.
And you don't think he needs to
make him as uncomfortable as possible.
And you don't think he needs to hear from you about things that you don't agree with?
I call him when I think he's done something right or well.
Well, I do as well.
I've wasted enough of your time.
No, you didn't waste any time. Thanks for a good call.
Hey, have a good day.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're never going to get anybody to agree with us 100% of the time, and I don't expect that. And I do want to make it plain that I do respect the rights of people to protest and all. I've done it. Back when Vietnam was going on, most certainly. When something's wrong, I think the people have the right and the obligation to let Washington know how we feel. But not everybody's going to agree. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going to be back in just a few minutes.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down. And the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Well, on the way, head in a cloud, the man of a thousand voices talking perfectly loud. But nobody ever hears him or the sound he appears to make. Never seems to notice, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning shows his feelings, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Like him, the fool on the
all the things to focus on, what is it about Bring 'Em On that so arouses them? What is it that so offends them? What is it that so irritates them? Oh, so you little hangers-on in Iraq, so you're going to threaten our guys? Well, come on. Bring 'Em On. We'll do. This intimidates the Democrats. What is the big deal?
Yes, Mary.
I have a son in Iraq, and I just wanted to tell y'all, my child has a family that loves him, too.
Yes.
His little girl was just born in February. When he get back here, he'll be on your own. And I'm trying to tell y'all, listen to me, please. You don't understand. We got a child there. I raised my child to be a good person. This is too much for them to die away on. In some land that they don't know about, every day I get scared. I just wanted to tell y'all that.
What is the big deal?
Here we are about 8.5 minutes before the hour of 4 o'clock Eastern time for all you folks out west and Central time and Mountain time and all that. You know, everybody thinks that no matter where they live, that's the only time that matters. I guess it's the only time that matters to me. Now, when you're radio, you have to be cognizant of everybody's radio times. You have to wonder what, on the West Coast, for example, right now, it's, nearly 1 o'clock. And so there are people having lunch right now. And so not a lot of people on the West Coast listening right now. They're out having lunch or something. And it's just something that we keep track of. Those of us are in this business, always cognizant of what other time zones are doing and how to fit in and so forth. Speaking of fitting in, I hope you'll fit in with the program and give us a call at 866-546-5254. Again, that's 866-546-5254. Love to have you join us. And don't think that you have to call and agree, because we don't always agree. And even if we're all Democrats here, some of us aren't, some of us are independents. I'm a Democrat, and I will remain a Democrat. Proud member of the Collier County, Florida Democratic Club, as a matter of fact. Lifelong member, lifetime member of the Cape Coral, Florida Democratic Club, and I've been members of other Democratic clubs as well. So I will remain a Democrat and try and get my party to be what it is that I need my party to be, what I expect out of the party, get them to live up to the principles of the Democratic Party. And I will try and get my Democrats, when they say something during a campaign, a political campaign, I expect them to live up to it. And many, many people that did campaign on ending the war and are not backing it up right now. And I'm not happy with that. I will remain unhappy with that until this thing is finally over with. And I was highly offended that this latest vote by the House, highly offended that they didn't take the money away from Bush, from him diverting it from Afghanistan and Iraq to a possible strike on Iran. Anybody that's sitting there right now considering a strike on Iran, according to most military experts that I know of, must be insane. There would have to be something wrong with you. Or, as a lot of people call into the show and talk about, or there's a big financial gain to be had for somebody. And we played that little clip a while ago of the soldiers talking about the money to be made by Halliburton and KBR doing laundry and all that. Just a damn shame. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Well, hello, Guy. It's Teresa calling. How are you today?
Hi, Teresa.
I just wanted to comment and ask you a few questions about the thing with this Comey, with the attempted shakedown of John Ashcroft when he was on his sickbed.
Something straight out of a bad movie.
Unbelievable. I guess within the beat, I had pancreatitis. Like, that's a very serious condition.
He was extremely ill, extremely ill. And
in fact, like, the survival rate for pancreatitis isn't very high.
Well, that that just shows the kind of thuggery and skullduggery that this administration will try. They proved with that episode that they have no shame. And I'm looking for, let me see, what have I got here someplace? I had Bush, today was, Bush was asked about this today, whether he sent him or not. And here's the little clip for it.
There's been some very dramatic testimony before the Senate this week from one of your former top Justice Department officials who describes a scene that some senators called stunning about a time when the wireless, or when the warrantless wiretap program was being reviewed. Sir, did you send your then chief of staff and White House counsel to the bedside of John Ashcroft while he was ill to get him to approve that program? And do you believe that kind of conduct from White House officials is appropriate?
Kelly, there's a lot of speculation about what happened and what didn't happen. I'm not going to talk about it.
I'm not going to talk about it, says the President of the United States. I'm not going to talk about it. I bet you a dollar to a donut the man sent him over there himself.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
I'm absolutely convinced of it. That's why he's not going to talk about it. He sent him over there himself, no question. I told my wife last night, I was telling her this story and explaining it to her in detail, and I don't think I've ever heard of anything quite so ugly take place in the government that we knew the absolute down and dirty nitty gritty details of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
What must Mrs. Ashcroft have felt like?
Terrified.
You know, the scene that Comey described of him sitting at the head of the bed, with, standing there, and the FBI guys with orders not to allow them to take Comey out of the room. I think, what is this? It's one of the ugliest things I've ever heard of. The Watergate break-in pales in comparison to this. Pales.
This made me feel sympathy for John Ashcroft.
And that's pretty hard.
I know. But I guess he wasn't one of them.
Well, at least the man, as bizarre as some of the actions of John Ashcroft were as Attorney General of the United States, at least he stood up for the law at this point. And at least he and Comey had discussed it and decided to stand for the law, and here they'd, you know, been openly breaking it. We're going to discuss this hopefully quite a bit after the top of the hour. I don't know. This was a very disconcerting thing to me to see, to read the entire transcript of it, we're going to try and...
Chilling and frightening.
Oh, it is. It is. And, you know, running up the steps to try and get there ahead of Card and Gonzalez. You know, Gonzalez came across at the Senate hearings when they put him up there as a choir boy. Very
with amnesia.
Yeah, very very demure when during his confirmation process. Oh, my. They took good care of it. Alberto Gonzalez. What a con job he did on people. He's the same as an underworld thug, as far as I'm concerned. There's no difference.
Yeah. What did you think of the sleepover last night with Tony Blair at the...
I'm tired of Tony Blair. Hope he goes away and I don't hear from him. I'm wondering if he'll get the appointment to the World Bank when Wolfowitz leaves. That's what I'm wondering. I'm hearing that he might. Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. We shall see. I don't know. Well, we've got news coming up at the top of the hour. Teresa, thanks for calling. I always appreciate hearing from you.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You are listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We've got a lot to talk about after the top of the hour. We hope you'll be there when we get back. I know I will. Not going anywhere. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few.
This is the Quality News Network. An immigration deal between the White House and a group of bipartisan senators has been reached. The agreement, expected to be approved by the president, will give legal status to millions of illegal immigrants and provide means to fortify the border. The deal still has to be voted on and approved by the Senate. Tony Blair is in Washington on his last official visit to the White House as British Prime Minister. He and President Bush talked about climate change and poverty in Africa as well as the Iraq War. In a press conference today, the staunch allies described their relationship as a true friendship. Blair will step down as English Prime Minister on June 27th. In Gaza, Israeli airstrikes destroyed a Hamas headquarters and a car carrying a top Hamas leader. Two Islamist militants were killed and 40 wounded in the separate attacks. Hamas's armed wing has threatened to resume suicide bombing in Israel in response to today's airstrikes. 43 people have been killed since fighting broke out last Friday. Diplomats from the U.S. and Iran have agreed to meet May 28th to discuss security in Iraq. The negotiations will take place in Baghdad and come at the request of Iraqi leaders. In Iraq, it's the sixth day of massive house-to-house searches for three American soldiers kidnapped during an al-Qaeda ambush Saturday. The U.S. military believes these soldiers are still alive and is now offering a $200,000 reward for information leading to the men's recovery. Today, trains are crossing through the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea for the first time in 50 years. Restoration of the rail link is another step in the reconciliation process between the two countries. In Paris, French President Nicolas Sarkozy today appointed a moderate as his prime minister. Inaugurated yesterday, the right-wing new French president has promised France dramatic social and economic reforms. In New Jersey, a rainstorm last night helped firefighters contain a 14,000-acre wildfire, which now is 70% contained. At least 13 homes were damaged and 6,000 residents were evacuated. In Florida, wildfires there are still burning with a threat of spreading because of lightning. The blaze, which started in the Okefenokee National Forest in Georgia 2 weeks ago, spawned the Bugaboo Fire, which has grown over 120,000 acres. Overall, 192 active fires still burn in the region, scorching more than 186,000 acres. In Connecticut, the legislature unanimously awarded $5 million to a man imprisoned for more than 18 years for a rape he didn't commit. This is the Quality News Network, Science and Business Next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The National Institutes of Health has announced its tests show chromium in drinking water leads to cancer in lab animals and may be dangerous to humans. The EPA has already proven inhaling chromium causes lung cancer. The findings will make it easier for the federal government to set new water safety standards. Marine biologists are attempting to use whale sounds to lure a lost humpback whale and her calf out of the Sacramento Canal and back out to the open water of the Pacific Ocean. Both of the animals appear to be injured by a boat's propeller. The U.S. Census Bureau today announced one-third of Americans are members of a racial or ethnic minority. Bureau officials say that amounts to about 100 million residents. The largest single minority group are Hispanics. Shares of Napster fell 10% following the online music services announcement. Its quarterly net loss increased to $8.5 billion. Amazon has announced it will launch an online digital music store with songs that are not encumbered with anti-piracy software. This will mean customers will be able to play the purchased songs on any music device, including iPods, and can burn them onto CDs multiple times with no restrictions. Despite the rising gasoline costs, Americans will still be hitting the roads this Memorial Day. A survey by the American Automobile Association shows more than 38 million Americans will log at least 50 miles in travel during the holiday weekend. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $65.41, and the Dow Jones is down 29 points. This is the Quality News Network. I'm Jay Gallet.
less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yes, back with you here in the Guy James Show today. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate your listenership. We really do. And we hope you'll continue to listen throughout this last hour of the program, second hour of the program today. You know, I get the old goosebumps every time that I hear that opening and I hear Franklin Roosevelt say that we have nothing to fear but fear itself. You wouldn't know that by listening to the Republicans nowadays, would you? No, sir. You wouldn't know it. Fear. Fear is what they're all about. My God, think what they've done by using fear on the American people. It's shameful. And did you watch the debate the other night? I know. You don't want to feel filthy, but I did. I watched a lot of it. I didn't watch it all. And I've combed through the transcript of the whole thing and so forth. And I'm just appalled. You know, Romney, for example, Romney said, I would tell people who had to do, you know, they're talking about the torture, said I would tell people who had to do the interrogation to use every method they could think of. It shouldn't be tortured. Now, speaking of torture, is that tortured logic or not? I would tell them to use every method they could think of. It shouldn't be torture. But every method they can think of. Mitt Romney. Giuliani, Tancredo, who else? Romney, Hunter. I swear to God, someone not knowing who they are or were listening to in their statements about torture the other night would swear that those guys could not possibly be Americans running for office. Someone from another era, maybe another generation, would accuse them of being Nazis or KGB agents working for Stalin. What kind of real American, is what I want to know, what kind of real American talks like that? And the audience, when they cheered those answers, it sent a chill down my spine. I fear for our country knowing that the ideas on torture presented by those men are approved of by the other party. And it's obvious from the response they got from the audience that they wholeheartedly approved. And they were pandering to the audience, and they were willing to accept any kind of torture. McCain, I'll give him a pass on it. It's a frightening thought to know that any of them who publicly acknowledged that torture was okay might possibly end up being the leader of this country. And I don't care. People so utterly devoid of morals should never be considered for public office. Never. Really, I think the debate and the reaction to it from the right-wingers was a real eye-opener. If America is so divided that on the one hand we've got a group seeking peace and a solution to what caused this mess in the first place. And on the other hand, we've got these warmongers, these radical authoritarian disciples, then we're much further apart than I've ever realized. It's so frustrating. It now seems impossible to me that the United States Congress can come up with any kind of an agreement on this war, at least any kind of an agreement that's going to satisfy the majority of our citizens. How do you reach a viable compromise when the one side wants to drop nuclear weapons on Iran and keep permanent military bases in Iraq, and the other side wants to sit down and actually talk with Iran and find a peaceable solution that everybody in the Mideast region can accept? Could the sides on this issue be any further apart? You know, logic says one of the two sides is dead wrong on this. And logic also says that the side that is wrong is the side that pushed this whole thing into this bottomless pit of money and lives that it's become. And I think we all know that that side that I'm talking about is these neocon hawks that have a stranglehold on the executive branch of government and the military. And, you know, I'm so tired of hearing about it. The Democrats went along with the war resolution. Yes. Yes, they did. Many of them did. They went along because of the lies and the distortions presented by the Bush administration. And I know what they say. You've heard it. I heard Duncan Hunter say on the House floor yesterday that it wasn't only Bush who had information that Saddam had WMDs. And he went on to list a number of instances where folks in the Clinton administration thought the same thing. And it's true. What he neglected to say, however, was that there's a hell of a big difference between thinking Saddam Hussein might have nukes and actually acting upon it like Bush did. There's a hell of a difference between having faulty intelligence and cooking intelligence to fit your agenda, as did Junior Bush and his pals. And Duncan Hunter can stand and bloviate on the House floor all he wants, and he's really good at it. But the truth is that many of us who bothered to get the facts about the WMDs before this whole thing started knew we were being led into a slaughter in Iraq. We predicted it. We said it would lead to a long, protracted, unwinnable situation that would lead to more terrorism, not less. And has that not come true? Just laymen out here, myself and you, many of us took the time to find out the facts about this. We predicted that thousands of American lives would be lost and we'd become mired in a military situation like Vietnam against an enemy that was just salivating at the prospect of engaging us in their land under their terms of engagement. We knew America was not prepared for the horrible situation we're now facing. We knew the American public would not stand for it when they finally learned the truth, and we were right. We knew that Bush's folly would do nothing to stop terrorism. And it has done nothing but plant the seeds of more terrorism, not just in the Middle East, but around the entire world. Nobody in the government, nobody in the right-wing think tanks, nobody thinks there isn't more terrorism now as a result of this war. Look, we allowed a group of outright authoritarian thugs to take over our military policy. Your Richard Pearl, your Wolfowitz, Cheney, Feith, and others, they were running a program, a planned program of deceit that is, for my money, is unparalleled in American history. That I know of, that's ever come to the light of day in our American history. No group has ever so successfully waged a campaign of outrageous propaganda to take us into a war. And make no mistake about it, they saw this as their finest hour. And instead of now admitting that they were dead wrong, they continue to insist that they were absolutely correct in their decisions and blame the failures on the military. The whole gang of them are traitors. Benedict Arnold has always been the name used when one brings up treason. From now on, I hope the American public learned that Arnold's transgressions didn't come close to measuring up to this modern-day gang of traitors. Didn't come close. When you think of what we've lost because of this gang's treason as compared to Benedict Arnold, there is no comparison. Could only hope that the American public would learn a lesson, and in the future, when they want to talk and throw out a euphemism, a name for a traitor, that they forget Benedict Arnold. When talking about traitors to this nation and horrible damage done to this nation, willfully done to this nation, in the future, I hope the history books will have the name of Pearl and Wolfowitz and Cheney and Douglas Feith and the others who were involved in this. I don't know that any Americans have had more blood on their hands than these people do. I don't know that anybody has. I really don't. We've been wrong before. We'll be wrong again. We've been involved in wars we should not have been involved in. But there is no excuse this time around. There's no excuse. You know, back in the days of, just for example, the War of 1812 and the Civil War and the Spanish-American War and World War I and so forth, those were different times. And the government could, if so inclined, pretty much tell the people anything they wanted them to. And who knows, maybe they did. But we are in the information age. There is no excuse for any American not having complete information on this whole thing. There was no excuse for any American not to know the truth about why we were going into this war. You're abrogating your responsibilities as a United States citizen if you didn't take the time to find out what this was all about. And oh yes, there are those who did take the time to find out that disagree with me. They are the neocons on the other side. They are the authoritarian figures on the other side. They are the people whom we will never convince that this is wrong. They are the people who think the United States of America has the right, the privilege to go into any other country that they want to and take whatever resources we want to, and feed the profits to a company like a Halliburton or a KBR or a Bechtel. Those people think that's perfectly fine. And what a rotten shame that is. What a shame that is. I don't know that we can ever change the minds of people like that. I don't think so. There are authoritarian figures in every society. You know, and it's fascinating. It's fascinating to watch the Republicans trying to distance themselves from this administration by saying George Bush isn't a conservative and these guys aren't Republicans. Oh, I know you've heard that, and I've heard it over and over and over again. And they're right, of course. George Bush isn't a conservative. And he's not what I call a true Republican, but that doesn't change the fact that conservative Republicans put these guys in the White House, and they bragged about it until things started to go sour. And it started to jeopardize their party. And one has to wonder about a party of people who can be snookered so easily by a gang of thugs like the Bush boys. If there's ever been a better reason to abandon your party affiliation and vote for the other guys, it ought to be right now. And after watching that crowd at the Republican debate a couple of nights ago hoot and holler, when mention of torture and more aggression came up, you have to be careful not to be tempted to visualize them in snazzy brown shirts carrying torches and marching in their high-top leather boots. They are the kinds of people who would follow any authoritarian leader wherever he wanted to lead them. It's happened before in modern times, and it could easily happen again. Don't kid yourself. But fortunately, I really don't think, I've got enough faith that I don't think most Americans are so foolish and off base in their thinking. Perhaps a lot of it's been apathy. Call us the elite. Call us what you want. But recognize the fact that we think, instead of blindly following the lead of somebody as ignorant and foolish as George W. Bush, people like him and Dick Cheney and many of their cohorts, they'll take everything they can get. They'll grab everything they can get. I said at the beginning of this administration that they were going to do the old smash and grab thing, and they have not disappointed. They will do as much as they can get away with, and the more they get away with, the more they want. They'll lie, they'll cheat, and steal their way into getting what they want. They want power and money, and they're willing to do anything, and I do mean anything, to get it, and apparently they have done anything to get it. Maybe you don't agree. I don't know. Many of us have been screaming about this for years. How can it be that these people have so radically changed America's policies? How can it be that they've been allowed by the Congress to get away with outright lies and thievery for so long? And we're mistaken if we think that liberals are going to change them. They're going to have to clean up their own house. The thing is, are they willing to do it? Are they willing to take their party back from this terrible gang of neocons who took it from them and stole it from them in broad daylight? Will they be able to tell the fundies, for example, that their game of political extortion is over? Or will they allow it to continue? Oh, they can holler all they want about Bush not being a Republican or a conservative, but they can't erase the fact that they helped him get to where he is. And they did it so very willingly. He's their boy, and they're going to have to live with that. They made the deal with the devil, and they supported him all along the way and called the rest of us un-American because we tried to warn them about the consequences of having a leader like Junior Bush. And if Bush's disastrous administration had only harmed his party, then okay, so be it. Who the hell cares? But it's had disastrous effect for the rest of us. And actually for the whole world when you think about it. I'm certainly not reveling in any kind of political victory here. There has never been a time in our history when we need strong leadership and good government as we need right now. I honestly believe, as I told you the other day, that we're at one of those crossroads moments when we can straighten up and fly right, or we can keep spiraling out of control and crash and burn as a nation. And I think you know right now which direction we're headed. These guys have been so successful at peddling fear to the American public, they'd have you believe there's a terrorist in waiting on every corner. And that we should be afraid. Oh, be very afraid. They preach that fear of terrorism is the most important issue facing us, and that simply is not true. We have other problems. We're facing massive debt as a nation. Our people are in debt personally. We don't own anything anymore. The bankers own it all. The mortgages on our homes, our cars, credit card debt. We're a nation of debtors that have no way out. We owe our souls to the company store. And what's being done about it? Nothing. There's only one way to have a new beginning for our country. It's not a pleasant prospect, but we must impeach Bush and Cheney. That is not a fringe idea. Yes, he's only got about 20 months left in his term, but for the future of this nation, we need to throw him and Cheney out of office before they make things a lot worse. And lest you think they couldn't get worse, you imagine a war with Iran thrown in for good measure. And surely you don't doubt that that's being considered. Surely you don't doubt that they'll do it if given half a chance. No, sir. Now is the time to initiate proceedings to wipe the slate clean and start over again. Our Congress owes that to us. They should be accountable to us for that. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, if there has ever in the history of this nation been a time when impeachment of the president and the vice president should be so seriously considered, it is now. If not now, then when? It's an ugly situation. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Boxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary. We'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox on Boxed Up. And for music with political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
There's a
They say that anger
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thank you for being with us today. As promised, I've got an issue to talk about today that I know some of you folks around the country perhaps won't be interested in, but all the folks living in Florida and California, I'm sure, will want to listen up right now. We have on the phone with us Joseph and Nadi, and I guess we're going to call you Joe, right, Joe?
That'll be fine.
And you are the vice president.
Senior vice president, public affairs.
And you've got a tough job.
I do.
Tell our audience, public affairs for whom?
I represent the property casualty insurance industry, Property Casualty Insurers Association of America.
And I would not be kidding if I mentioned that that's not a real popular industry in the state of Florida right now, would I?
Well, we are we're an easy industry to dislike. It's not the most people friendly product. You only use it when the disaster happens, whether that's a small disaster that's very large to an individual, or a major catastrophe. And you pay a premium for peace of mind, and peace of mind sometimes hard to put a value on.
Value's the question right now. I was looking over what the legislation. First of all, let me ask you, and let me explain to some of our listeners who may not know what I'm talking about. The people in Florida here do. The Florida legislature, led by our new governor, Governor Crist, who, by the way, accepted $800,000 from the insurance industry, who said he was going to use it to fight for the citizens against the insurance industry, or in some fashion he said that. We had a legislative session that our legislature told us they were going to do something to aid the citizens on the outrageous insurance bills that are facing them right now. Do you think the legislature accomplished anything?
They did. They absolutely did. They passed legislation that will, in fact, lower homeowners' premiums for many, many consumers in the state. In fact, almost all consumers in the state. Some consumers, those in the highest risk areas, from Key West up the Atlantic seaboard, the most hurricane-prone regions, get the biggest breaks. Consumers in Jacksonville, Orlando, Tallahassee, Gainesville are going to save the least amount. What the legislature did, though, is in order to cut the premiums, they had to figure out some way to shift the cost. And what they did was they shifted the cost of paying for the next storm to the future, using borrowing capacity. And there's some question about whether there's enough borrowing capacity in the state to fill the gaps in that. They also shifted a major portion of the cost from homeowners, particularly homeowners in higher risk areas, to people who don't even own property insurance, who just drive a car, an insuring car. They'll be assessed to pay for the claims from the next catastrophe, and to businesses throughout the state.
Well, and the problem is we all drive cars.
We all drive cars.
So we're going to get double dipped on that, aren't we not, those of us that are paying?
The state's going to, after the next hurricane hits, and the state runs a deficit in its state-run insurance company that is continuing to grow because it's charging rates that are suppressed at the decision of the state legislature, someone's going to have to pay those losses. And the state decided that it would be best to spread those losses among all the policyholders in the state, including auto insurance policyholders and businesses.
And
now, whether you agree with that or not, there's still a financial gap. Whether you agree with that philosophy of risk spreading, the problem we see is there's still an enormous financial gap to the tune of, you know, tens of millions of dollars that calls into question, can the state raise that much money that fast to honor its commitment?
Well, let me ask you. You said suppressed premiums, for example. Suppressed in what way? I mean, we know the reinsurance industry here in Florida, or offshore, whoever they farmed it out to, made a monstrous profit this past year.
The insurance industry in general made a profit. The average rate of return was right up there with most Fortune 500 companies, 13% or 14% in 2006. And that's just about enough to offset the losses that the industry suffered after 2004 and 2005. It's an extremely cyclical business. And in Florida presents a unique challenge, and that's why the solution in Florida is going to look different than any other state. Florida presents a unique challenge because almost the entire state has some vulnerability to very large catastrophic losses from hurricanes. You know, it's a peninsula that sticks out in the middle of the ocean. There are more hurricanes in Florida than any place else in the world. There's also more coastal development in Florida than any place else in the world. And when you put those two together, it's very, very difficult to insure a risk at a price that consumers and public policymakers want you to charge. So there's going to be a government role. We understand that. Well, what we think needs to happen is that there needs to be a far more civil and a far more detailed dialogue between public policymakers and consumers and businesses and insurers about what the solution should be.
Well, the civility, that as you well know, I've known this interview is coming up for a week or two now, and insurance is something that's been on my, personally, me and my home, for example, and my neighbors. And I have to tell you, Joe, I've talked to a lot of people in the last couple of weeks, and actually over the past few months, insurance is the number one thing on people's minds here. It's not property taxes, it's insurance.
Trust me, I know. We've done a lot of talking to folks
today. And I must tell you that since this legislative session ended, there is a tremendous amount of disappointment. And you mentioned that they're going to lower prices. I have yet to talk to a single person, not one, who has had their premiums lowered. Not a single case have I talked to where somebody has had their premiums lowered.
Well, that's because the legislation is not going to the freeze on prices and the rating factors to be used not going to take effect till June 1st. So you still got some old rate filings and things filtering through the system. The other thing that's it's going to take some time is what I'm trying to say. You can't snap your fingers and say it's 1969 again. So it's going to take some time to filter through the system.
Why?
Well, because an immediate rollback of rates, I think you'd see companies bolt for the exits.
They already did.
Some have. Others, plenty of others, including ones I represent, want to help fix the system for the long term.
Do you represent State Farm?
No, I don't.
They bailed. How about Allstate?
We do represent Allstate.
And haven't they bailed on a lot of their customers as well?
They have, they've made a conscious decision to limit their exposure to a catastrophic loss. They have, there's the commitment you have to make to your policyholders, and there's a commitment that you have to make to your shareholders. You have to manage your company properly.
Well, Joe, here's the way the consumers see it, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, and I don't mean it. I'm not one to be antagonistic about it and so forth. This is like going to a casino. We're betting that we're going to have losses, and you're betting that we're not. And we're at Vegas in a roulette wheel here, and the casino overall makes a ton of money, but there's one guy that comes in and gets lucky at the roulette wheel and keeps winning, but the overall casino keeps making a pile of money, and you toss that guy out and say you can't play anymore. That's what's happening here.
Well, I mean, I guess I see things a little bit differently, because as we look at Florida, we have to manage our business as if there are going to be losses. Yeah, I mean, you have to.
Didn't you do that back when Hurricane Donna hit this area here in 1960? Hadn't been another loss to a hurricane since then in this whole area where I live. And so they had 40 some years of premiums collected, and nothing paid out. And now we have people.
I probably dispute you on the nothing paid out. I mean, we pay claims every day.
Well, but by and large, we're talking about hurricane, right?
Okay.
Hurricane
right.
Losses. And so finally there is a loss, and it's, oh my. I mean, I know people, Joe, and I'm speaking for personal experience, whose insurance on condominiums, for example, has gone from $700 or $800 a year on a very modest condominium to $7,000 or $8,000.
Trust me, I understand the anger, and what we want to do, our organization, in conjunction with consumers groups and business groups and public policy makers down there, is figure out a way to stabilize the market for the long term, figure out a way to make insurance reliable, as affordable as possible, something people can count on to be there year after year after year. And it takes more pieces to that puzzle. It takes more pieces to build that puzzle than simply saying, we're going to roll back prices, or we're going to have the state take this over. Now, you know, the state has an advantage in that, you know, if the state's writing policies, it doesn't have to write them and reserve enough for possible losses, because they can make up for their losses by assessing people or borrowing or taxing folks. Companies, insurance companies in the end, don't have that luxury.
Well,
if you don't have the money at hand, you're out of business.
I think we should mention right here that we had, to people that don't necessarily live in Florida, that we have an insurance group here called Citizens, and it's what a lot of people in other states would call high-risk insurance, because when you can't get any other insurance, you're thrown to Citizens. It's run by the state and like you say, going to be funded by the state if there are any shortfalls. And they're required, if I got it wrong, they're required by law or allowed by law to charge 25% above the highest premiums available in other commercial companies.
Actually, the law says that if the private market is 15%, it was within 15% or 15% more than Citizens, with 15% of Citizens' price, you can go to Citizens. What the state did was dramatically expand Citizens' insurance company, the state-run insurer, beyond its original role, which was to be an insurer of last resort for high-risk properties, the properties that are built on barrier islands that no one in their right mind would insure.
Well, didn't the state pretty much have to do that, though?
The state had to do that because the state is funded by the development in those coastal areas. One of the problems that has to be addressed is that someone has to be the responsible parent and say, you know what, we need to limit development in the highest risk areas. Now, you've got tough building codes down there, and God love you for that. Those need to be strengthened. Those need to be put in place across the state. People need to be given incentives to retrofit their homes and all those other good things that deal with building codes. But continuing to build right on the shore. Right on the shore. And we saw what happened with the storm surge in Katrina. That's just waiting to happen down there. By justifying it by saying, well, we got tough building codes, is like an alcoholic saying, I got my problem under control, I'm just going to drink beer. It may take longer to kill you, but it's going to kill you.
Well, forget the new people building development. Everybody lives here knows developers own the state lock, stock, and barrel and do what they want to do in Florida, and that's a fact. But how about the people that have owned homes here for 20, 30, 40 years? I know a lot of people that are having to leave, are forced to leave Florida on account of the insurance.
Between insurance and property taxes, yeah, I'd say you're right. Folks are looking at Georgia and Carolina and Tennessee and looking at alternative places to live. No question about it. Maybe you need a system where you say for folks with true financial need, who've been in their homes for a certain amount of time, you provide them some sort of financial assistance. I don't think you can rule any reasonable answer out of the equation right now. What needs to be done, though, is for everyone to get together and say, look, we need to come up with a solution and stop throwing rocks at each other, which is unfortunately what happened, during the election campaigns of 2006 and continued right through the special session and regular session, where you get in a political fight and you lose track of what's really important. And what's really important is making the insurance market in Florida stable for the long term, so that people can count on it, so that it underpins the entire economy, and you have a healthy, safer, and stronger Florida.
What do you do about the? And as you well know, Florida is so full of people that live here on fixed incomes. People retired, came down here and bought a modest home many years ago, or a condominium, and they're on a fixed income. They're faced with these monstrous insurance charges that we've got right now. And you said, well, and you mentioned a moment ago, we've got to come up with some sort of a program to give them financial assistance. What the insurance company is willing to do about it, their part?
Well, I think we need to do a couple things. One, we need to do a much better job. We need to do what we did for property insurance, what we did on the auto insurance issue. Our industry built years ago an organization called the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Tests cars, crashes cars, came up with all these fantastic safety devices, airbags and side restraints and 5 mile an hour bumpers and all those things that have dramatically reduced the loss of life and injuries and in car accidents, and brought the cost of car insurance down because you're able to quantify what those are worth. We need to do the same thing. Our industry needs to step up, do the same thing, fund the same kind of research, perhaps with a university in Florida, to build a facility to test what works and what doesn't when in terms of hurricane safety. Then you need to quantify those and say, you know what, if you do this to your house, you'll get this much off your premium. The state needs to step in and say that by the same token, if you spend this much on your house for these quantifiable loss prevention techniques, you get to write that off on your property taxes. There's got to be some financial incentives here. We need to provide them. The state needs to provide them. We need to be much more, we the insurance industry, need to be much more upfront and transparent about exactly what it costs to do business down there. Open up the black box. Consumers need their trust restored, and the way you do that is to provide information and evidence. It sometimes can be difficult to understand. We need to find a way to work with state legislators and consumers groups to make that simpler so they do understand what they're getting and what it costs.
But Joe, it's no secret to you, I'm sure, that we've heard from the legislature over the past few months that we need to do this and that, and you're saying that we need to do that. When are the we needs going to stop, and there's going to be some real action?
I hope it's before the wind blows again, and I wish I could be more confident that would be the case. One of the things we did when we rolled out this study earlier this week was call on the legislature to form a commission, a bipartisan or a nonpartisan commission, to sit down and do this kind of recommendation, so that when they get back in 2008, we can start making some progress. 2007, we're all going to be in the same boat, and that's hoping the wind doesn't blow. And hope is a wonderful thing, but it doesn't make a good economic strategy.
I'm correct in my statement, am I not, that Charlie Crist, the new governor of Florida, received $800,000 in campaign contributions from the insurance industry?
I do not know, but I do know
he admitted it during
that he
debate.
Returned money that we sent him. So, I mean, I can't tell you. I'm not a political action committee
it,
guy.
It just looks bad. It looks very bad when you have that kind of money floating around in a governor's race, and then we come out of a legislative session with virtually nothing for anybody.
Well, I mean, but look at what Crist is saying. Governor Crist is saying, you know, I'm putting the nails in the coffin of the insurance industry. That's what he said.
Yeah.
After the regular session.
Yeah, and I read that comment and I thought, what is he talking about?
Well, from our perspective, he's certainly, you know, all the signals he's sending is that, you know, you guys aren't welcome here. And we don't need the red carpet rolled out, and we understand that we have we're not the most empathetic during this last round of price increases. We didn't do a very good job. And there's plenty of folks in our industry that will stand up and take responsibility for that, and we're going to try to change things. But for the governor to come out and saying, you know, I'm going to put the nails in your coffin, that, you know, if you were a company considering doing business in Florida and you read that, would you think twice?
Joe, I have to tell you what everybody I know said when they read that and heard that Charlie Crist said that. that Charlie turned around to is a scenario where Charlie turned around to the insurance company executive, wink, wink, and said, now, watch what I tell him now. Charlie did that to do nothing more than to ingratiate himself to the voters of the state of Florida like he was doing something for them. I don't think he means anything against the insurance. You know, he got 800 grand from them. He's not going to do anything to upset them that much. I really don't think. Anyway, I without being too antagonistic, and I know our time's about up here, I wanted to ask you, I think you've got a real tough job. And what do you hope to accomplish, you and your organization hope to accomplish here? What would be the end result of your work in all of this?
If the legislature forms a commission that includes some of the smartest people in your universities down in Florida, that includes consumer representatives and business representatives and legislative leaders and the insurance industry, a truly well-represented, all the stakeholders, and said, you know, let's take 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, whatever it is, to sit down and consider all the options and come up with the best recommendations we can that will best serve the people of Florida. If that took place, then I would consider that a success.
Well, hopefully, if it gets done, it won't be too late for a lot of people. I fear that it will be. There are a lot of people that are on the edge right now because of the premiums, and believe me, in fact, I had a conversation with neighbors about it this morning. So, anyway, Joe, I want to thank you. You're a courageous guy doing what you do, and I wish you much success, and I hope that you can get done everything that you mentioned here that'd like to be get done in good faith, and I appreciate you very much coming on the program today.
Well, thanks for giving me the forum, and hopefully we can keep talking about this and make some progress.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thanks, Guy.
Well, it is a problem here. You know, I know people who are giving up their homes. I know people who have mortgages on their home. And all of a sudden they get slammed with an insurance bill that's like, oh my God, and they can't pay it. They don't have the means to pay it. And the bank, the mortgage holder is coming along and saying, hey, you got to have insurance. And the people are saying, I can't afford the insurance. And the bank's saying, fine, but you got to have insurance. And you're either going to pay the highway robbery to the insurance company or we're going to insure it ourselves. And that's going to cost you even more. And guess what? If you don't pay, you're going to lose your home. That's happening over and over and over again. And it's a very, very sad situation. It's a critical situation here in Florida right now. Now, I know people around the nation, a lot of you aren't bothered by this. But the insurance companies did make vast amount of money, despite Katrina, in the past few years. And what they did, a lot of them, they came into Florida and they set up subsidiaries. And so that particular subsidiary, during the year of the hurricanes there a couple of years ago, lost some money. And so they said, well, you know, our company in Florida lost a lot of money. Well, add it in with the rest of your company around the country and then tell us how much money you lost. And like I said, it's a gamble. When you buy insurance, you're betting that you're going to have some losses, and they're betting that you're not. And you know as well as I do, even if you do, like your car insurance, for example, if you have a crash with your car and it's a couple of grand to get it fixed or whatever it is, you're going to end up paying for it anyway because they're going to raise your premiums. It's a game you cannot win. It's loaded on the wrong end for the consumer, that's for sure. And yes, they're going to get away with charging higher auto premiums here in Florida. Well, anyway, I'm glad Joe would come on the program and talk about it. He is a courageous guy to do that because I got to tell you, there isn't anybody less popular in this state right now, probably, than someone in the insurance industry. And we're hearing one horror story after another. And the sad part about it is, as always, And it comes to in almost every case, and any kind of a problem, it's not a problem for the rich. Oh, yeah, they got a little more insurance to pay. you got a guy that's got a $10 million home all over in the beach, and his insurance was $75,000 in last year, and it's $150,000 this year. So what? He's still going to live his lifestyle. But you got somebody living in a modern two-bedroom, two-bath home in Florida that's 20 years old. And along comes the insurance company and said, we're going to quadruple, quintuple your insurance premiums. And they're living on a fixed income. Guess who's going to suffer? But isn't that the way? Isn't that how it always is? Little guy is the one doing the suffering. As always. Little guys fight the wars. Little guys pay the bills. Little guys get hurt in this situation. And I don't think it's how it was intended to be. But so be it. I guess enough for an insurance agency today. But again, I want to thank Joseph Anati for coming along. He's Executive Vice President of the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. And they, along with the legislature, worked on it, I guess, during a legislative session, the last one. But as always, the politicians came out and said, oh, man, we did some great things. And you wouldn't believe how the politicians came out and said, oh, man, we really worked hard. We fought hard for the consumer. And the consumers are standing there going, and what did you do again? Well, we nothing. And I have yet to talk to anybody who's had their premium lowered, so we shall see. He said in June, hey, that's coming up pretty quick, and wouldn't you have your statement already? If your new insurance was going to be lower and you had your new premium for June, wouldn't you know it already? I don't know. We'll take him at his word on that. Well, I did get some grief about what I said about Jerry Falwell the other day, and I thought I was rather kind to him. But in the couple of minutes that I've got left in this program today, I would like to remind you of just a couple things Jerry Falwell said. He said, I sincerely believe that the collective efforts of many secularists during the past generation resulting in the expulsion from our schools and from the public square has left us vulnerable. He said, God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve. The Jews are returning to their land of unbelief. They are spiritually blind and desperately in need of their Messiah and Savior. And another quote from Jerry Falwell, if you're not a born-again Christian, you're a failure as a human being. He said, I believe that the people of Israel are the chosen people of God. He said, the ACLU is to Christians what the American Nazi Party is to Jews. He hated the feminist movement. He hated the homosexual lifestyle. He said grown men should not be having sex with prostitutes unless they're married to them. That homosexuality is Satan's diabolical attack upon the family that will not only have a corrupting influence upon our next generation, but it will bring down the wrath of God. You wondered why I said some of the things I said about Jerry Falwell the other day? Well, that's why. I'm sure he probably said some things that were right and correct in his life, but he said a hell of a lot of things that were wrong and oh so wrong and immoral. And I cannot forget that, nor should anybody forget that. Well, you have been listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I would ask you to please remember that we're a listener-supported program, and we need your help to stay on the net. So, theguyjamesshow.com. You listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Don't forget, never forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you next time, gang.